Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day Sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Last time on Frightful, we explored a chilling, true-life paranormal case from 1953, where Peter and Dorothy McEwen left London to live in a brooding old house in the Scottish Highlands by Loch Ness. All seemed well until their new housekeeper, Elspeth, began to hear strange knocking on her first night in the house. And later that same night, she had this terrifying sighting of a female specter on the landing.
Elspeth! What is it? She's there. Just down the hallway. She's coming towards us on her hands and knees. She's crawling up the floor. There's something in her hand. A candle? Look. Look. She's coming. She's looking at us. She's crawling back to us. It's horrible.
Was Elspeth insane? Or could she really have the ability to see the dead? I'm Peter Laws, and tonight on Frightful, I invite you to return with me to Ardachy Lodge for the second and final part of The House of the Crawling Woman. After a long and stressful night, daylight finally covered the lodge, and it was good to wake to the knowledge that the spirit, if that's indeed what it was, had not followed Dorothy to the cottage. Was it somehow trapped inside the house? Peter was fascinated and decided that he would do some digging into the history of Ardachy. He headed straight to his neighbor's house, Mrs. Beckett. Surely she would be able to share some information about the previous owners. And so, as he sat there with her that morning in Colicky House, Mrs. Beckett shared the history of Ardachy Lodge.
Ardachy was built in 1840. It was a shooting lodge for Charles Gillespie. He was a local landowner. Then the house was sold on to Colonel Campbell until it was eventually bought by Mr. and Mrs. Bruins. Who you got the house from? Her sister lived there too.
Could you tell me about them? Mrs. Bruin especially?
Well, they'd previously lived in Ireland before coming out here. Mrs. Bruin was an older lady. Very old, really. She was a lovely woman, true enough.
Forgive me, but did she die in the house?
No, she didn't. She was moved to Inverness, where she died a few months after.
I see. And would you mind describing what Mrs. Bruin looked like?
These are peculiar questions, sir.
I know they are, Mrs. Beckett. Please continue.
Well, Mrs. Bruin was old, and so she dressed old. No shame in that. She'd always wear her wrapping around her shoulders, like a shawl.
And her hair?
It was grey and long, all bedraggled, you know, especially near the end.
And did she wear a little hat or a cap?
How did you know?
You say Mr. Bruin moved out only a few months before her death. Why? What happened?
Oh, it was a sad end, Peter. She suffered awful from arthritis. It crippled her, poor lamb. Then she had a stroke. And the dementia made it all much, much worse. It got too much for Mr. Bruin to cope with, so she went to a care home in Inverness. She died there. I think she missed the lodge.
Poor lady.
Yes, I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy. So athletic and mad, you see. Seeing her like that up at the lodge, it was frightening. Seeing her crawling hither and thither.
Pardon me.
It was the pain, you see. It got so much she struggled to stand straight, so she had to crawl on all fours. It was her only way of keeping watch on the servants. She thought they were robbing her, so she'd crawl along the landing and check to see if they were making off with anything. It'd be so dark at night she'd crawl, clutching a candle so she might catch them in the act. You've gone and dropped your tea. Are you quite all right, Peter?
Peter left Colicky House with his head spinning. And as he pulled back into Ardicky Lodge, he wondered, what would the second night bring? They had a new plan for the second night. As well as the main kitchen, there was a smaller kitchen, and it seemed to be safe from the phantom in there. And so the plan was for Elspeth and Jamie to sleep on two little makeshift beds in that kitchen. The kitchen, however, was right at the foot of the staircase, where those footsteps had been heard on the first night. So Peter and Dorothy told them to make the most of it and just sleep, and to not open the kitchen door. Exhausted from the previous night, they said goodnight to the McEwans and headed upstairs to bed earlier than normal. It was 9:30 p.m. Down in the little kitchen, the plan seemed to be working well. Jamie fell fast asleep. And since there was no knocking or footsteps and certainly no apparitions of elderly women crawling along the kitchen floor, even Elspeth finally managed to drift off. But not for long. She flicked her eyes open at about 9:45 p.m. It wasn't a sound that woke her, but a thought.
Oh no, I forgot about the milk. Blast!
The local shepherd would always deliver milk to the house and leave it outside by the door in the main kitchen down the hall. Elspeth had been instructed that it was her task as housekeeper to bring the milk in. But here she was, on only her second night of work, and she'd forgotten about the milk. She'd popped down the hall quickly and grab it. It'd only take a minute. She got out of bed and moved towards the small kitchen door when the knocking began. Not loud enough to wake Jamie, but clear enough to send her heart racing. This was no generator or settling house. Somebody's knuckle was rapping against the kitchen walls.
Okay. Breathe. Breathe.
We can't know what drove her to proceed to open the kitchen door. Sheer curiosity, perhaps, or some bizarre compulsion, like she was being beckoned as she had the night before. Personally, I think she was just panicked about forgetting the milk. This was their dream job, and so her and her husband had given up so much for it. She'd already caused such a fuss since arriving. So even as the knocks were sounding, she walked towards the kitchen door that led to the hall, reached out into the darkness, and opened it.
No!
The woman was waiting for her, right there at the bottom of the staircase. Yet there was something very different this time. Elspeth would later tell researchers,
"It looked wraith-like. Barely a human figure at all. But the more I looked, the more I started to recognise it."
Elspeth screamed and flung herself back into the kitchen, slamming the door behind her and waking Jamie up. She was terrified and confused because the more she thought about it, the more she became sure. The apparition she had just seen on the other side of that door was the mistress of the house, Dorothy herself, who was upstairs right now in bed. Dorothy wasn't upstairs for long, however, because both her and her husband couldn't help but hear the commotion. And when they came down, once again, Elspeth said that she had seen a spirit, this time at the bottom of the stairs. But that night she did not tell them that she had somehow seen the ghost of a living person, Dorothy McEwan. That was just too confusing and disturbing to mention. As the days went on, Peter was both frustrated and fascinated with this situation. Their new housekeeper had either lost her mind, was tricking them, or she was genuinely seeing something from beyond the veil in this, their new house. After all, how could she have known those details about Mrs. Bruin? He needed answers, so he called for help from some fellow members of the Society of Psychical Research. The SPR have members across the world, and sure enough, there were members of the society not too far from Loch Ness. And so a few days later, two SPR members came to the lodge. A believer and a skeptic. Mr. Ross was an elderly retired diplomat, and after years of research and experience, he was very open to the world of the supernatural. The other SPR member was Mr. Matheson. A young man and local maths teacher, Matheson had clear and dogmatic opinions on the supernatural. It did not exist, and there must always be a rational explanation. That night, Mr. Ross and Mr. Matheson gathered everybody in the small kitchen. Remember, this was where Elspeth and Jamie were now sleeping. It felt like the only safe space in the house, just as long as Dorothy didn't open the door to that eager, waiting lodge. That notion would form the core of this experiment, because the two men sat with the two couples in the kitchen, and they dimmed the lights, so that the room fell into darkness, lit only by the glow from the old oven's flame. Ross and Matheson sat on each bed, with an armchair in the middle. Sitting in that armchair was Elspeth MacDonald.
Now, Elspeth, are you feeling comfortable?
Yes.
Good, then before we proceed, you must remember that we are all here with you, supporting you.
Okay.
Good. Then shall we please open the kitchen door, Peter, if you could just gently open.
They sat there in the darkness while the kitchen door was slowly opened. They waited. Elspeth's eyes were no doubt fixed on that doorway with dread. Might the old woman's head soon peek around the lower edge of the frame? Or the wraith-like figure of Mrs. McEwen? All stayed quiet until the rapping noises began. At first, it was coming from the outside wall, the one with the window on. And the rapping went on in slow, rhythmic patterns. Elspeth started to breathe, and strangely, the SPR men noticed that her breath seemed to follow the pattern of the knocks. She did this for a short while before something snapped in Elspeth. She suddenly widened her eyes and pushed herself back into the armchair and screamed in revulsion at the doorway. Someone immediately switched the lights on, and Elspeth began to gather her breath and calmed down. Mr. Matheson said,
"What did you see? Was it the old woman?"
"No, it was a different woman. A young lady. Only this time she started coming into the room."
I think it's best that we take a break.
After the stress of the experience, they gave her some space to rest until she was ready to try the open door experiment again. Again, they gathered in the kitchen, with Elspeth laying on one of the beds this time, and they switched out the lights. They opened the door into the corridor and the foot of the staircase and waited. It was just like before. After a stretch of silence, the knocking started, matching Elspeth's breathing. But despite the anticipation of what might appear at the door, something happened. Elspeth fluttered her eyes open.
Jamie, love. Have I been dreaming?
It's okay. You're okay now. We're all here with you.
The rose tree.
What?
The rose tree. It has been neglected. Someone has removed the rose tree.
After she had said this odd sentence, she sank back onto the bed and went silent, while the knocking noises began again. As these knocks continued, Mr. Matheson grabbed a torch. He wanted to check if Elspeth was making those knocking noises herself. He quickly dropped low and shone the beam under the bed. Nobody saw her hands move. It was clear that Elspeth was feeling overwhelmed by this entire experience. They decided to call it a night and return to their rooms. The researchers were deliberately put in the rooms where the supernatural activity had taken place on that first night. The next morning at breakfast, the SPR men reported that nothing unusual in their rooms had occurred overnight. Elspeth and Jamie, however, said that the knocking on the kitchen walls had continued until 5 a.m. The SPR members left, with no real evidence of anything supernatural beyond, that is, the claims of Elspeth herself. But Peter and Dorothy could not stop thinking about what Elspeth had said last night in her almost trance-like state.
The rose tree. Someone has removed the rose tree.
The reason this struck the McEwans so profoundly was because when he and Dorothy had first arrived at the lodge, they had done clearing out and yard work, including hiring a part-time gardener to help clear out an old greenhouse in the garden. They'd hoped to grow tomatoes in there, but the space was taken up by two trees. One was a peach tree, and the other a sizable rose tree. To make way for the tomatoes, Peter had told the gardener to uproot the rose tree and place it outside. That way they might have some lovely roses blooming in the summer. Only the transplant did not take, and after a week the rose tree was dead.
You know, our neighbour, Mrs. Beckett, she told me that old Miss Bruin loved that rose tree.
Then did you tell her that we had moved it? Maybe she told Elspeth or Jamie somehow.
No, that's just it. I didn't have the heart to say. She wouldn't know.
Then there is simply no way that she could have known that we had moved that tree.
Yet, that's exactly what she said last night.
Wait a minute. Don't you remember? The day the McDonald's arrived, I was showing them around the grounds. Yes, I remember. We passed through the rose garden, and I said nothing of the tree. But she got upset. I thought she was just tired, so I sent them off to bed.
Mr. Matheson thinks she's making it up. He has a point. She's the only one that ever sees anything.
But what about the knocking? We all heard that.
True, but I suppose she could have done it with her knuckle.
We would have seen that. Besides, think it through, Peter. She knew about the rose tree. She knew what Mrs. Bruin looked like, all the way down to her shawl and hat and long, straggly hair.
Lots of old women look like that.
But do they crawl across the landing on all fours, with a candle in hand, just like Mrs. Beckett told you?
I know. There's another thing, too.
What?
Why? I mean, what would be the point? Jamie gave up a good, solid job in London. A postman with a pension to boot. Why on earth would he and his wife trek all the way up to the Scottish Highlands, giving all that up? Ready to put on some ridiculous show. And for whom? There's no rhyme or reason to it. Unless...
Unless she saw something.
It's the only thing that makes sense. As mad as it sounds, perhaps Elsbeth is some sort of spirit medium. That she can see the dead roaming around. Perhaps she never really realized it until she came to Ardicky. Perhaps this place bought out her gift.
Do you really call that a gift?
The strange paranormal activity continued in the days ahead, and it was obvious that Jamie and Elspeth could never be the permanent caretakers here at the lodge. 12 days after arriving, they were asked to leave Ardicky Lodge on the 29th of August. Elspeth and Jamie MacDonald were devastated, and so they boarded the train with their dreams in tatters. The activity stopped after Elspeth's departure, which only brought more weight to the theory that she had somehow manufactured the entire experience. Peter McEwan found himself drawn to the thought that she might have at least caused the rapping noises herself, but that she was being driven by an unknown force. But then he learned of other stories. Peter wrote this for the SPR files.
There was one further incident. A month or two after the events recorded, we had staying with us an old school friend, now a London solicitor. very skeptical of the paranormal, and one evening he clearly heard footsteps in the empty room above his own and was certain there was an intruder in the house. Nothing was found, and our friend returned to London quite shaken.
Peter also spoke to a local policeman who'd been doing odd jobs at the house. This was in the year or so after Mrs. Bruin's death, and not long before the McEwans arrived. The officer said that he was in the kitchen of the house when he heard footsteps outside the door. He opened the door and looked, but the hallway was completely empty. But to his shock, he could still hear the footsteps continuing in front of him. It was so clear and distinct that the policeman had no embarrassment in admitting that fear drove him running from the lodge, and he hid in the safety of the nearest cottage. Dorothy McEwan was never the same after the incidents with Elspeth. She felt uneasy in the house. She wondered if the haunting could be cleansed or exorcised. So at one point, she and her neighbour Mrs. Beckett and some monks from the local monastery walked through the house saying prayers, lighting candles and sprinkling holy water. Yet the strain of their house and the midnight thoughts of a silent, crawling resident was just too much for the McEwans. Like the McDonalds, their dreams of a fresh start had died. The house and the estate was offered for sale, and it was eventually sold to a vet who moved in without any known incidents. The lodge was then sold to a Major Vernon, who already owned the nearby estate of Glen Doe. Vernon didn't even live on the property, and so Ardicky was left closed, desolate, empty and lonely. Perhaps that's what the house had wanted all along. And it stood that way, abandoned for many years. Local children would come to the house, but run home again, having sworn they had seen the ghost of an elderly woman moving through the house. And the lodge stood like this until the winter of 1968, when the house met its final chapter. An army team were brought in to set dynamite into the walls of the lodge, tapping them gently in where the sound of knocking had frightened others years before. And as the soldiers set the charges, there was talk of local stories, that anyone who dared go into this old rambling house might hear the creaking crawl of an elderly woman on all fours. Yes, the house had a reputation now. But on that winter's day, with a sky of grey above them, the soldiers detonated the charges, and the lodge, that had stood so quiet for years, suddenly exploded with a huge roar, flinging parts of the house high in the air and scattering its entrails around the estate. The dust fell, and then the bulldozers were brought in. Researchers looking at maps might have been intrigued to note that Ardicky Lodge stood at the intersection of four major ley lines. But now the rooms and windows and hallways and staircases of Ardicky had vanished, as if they had never been there. Though the local children still say that when they come to play in the grounds of Ardicky, they see a strange woman moving through the grass, and they run. The case of Ardicky Lodge really is a fascinating and frustrating one. Frustrating in the sense that it hinges on one single witness. Indeed, in such cases, it can be easy to dismiss claims of the paranormal. But how did Elspeth MacDonald know so much about the crawling woman? Details that would be proven right later. What of the policeman and the skeptical lawyer who stayed with the McEwans and also heard footsteps? Is it possible that Dorothy MacDonald really did have the ability to see the dead, but it had laid latent in her life, and it was something she didn't really understand until she just happened to set foot in a house sitting on intersecting ley lines that opened her eyes? And if that is the case, who's to say that you or I don't have the ability to see the crawling dead? And the only thing stopping us so far is that we haven't found the place where this ability will be unlocked. What if that place is somewhere you might visit soon? Or even where you lay your head to sleep tonight? Yes, the landscape of the Scottish Highlands is filled with beauty and drama, but also mystery. And if you ever drive to Loch Ness, try and remember that not all of the mysteries are lurking under the water. Look to the shore and the homes and wonder what or who might be walking or crawling through the quiet, lonely hallways. I'm Peter Laws, and you've been listening to The House with the Crawling Woman on Frightful. Well, thank you for listening to the episode tonight. And thanks especially to Zoe Bach and Ed Frizzell, who played the parts tonight. If you're enjoying this show, Frightful, and my other show, Our Curious Past, then perhaps I could trouble you to check out patreon.com/PeterLaws. That's a place... Ooh, that's a place where you can find out a little bit about the work that I do, but also an opportunity to support these shows, and you get a bunch of extra content, and it really does make a difference. So if you would like to check that out, go to patreon.com/PeterLaws, or indeed just check out peterlaws.co.uk, find out more about my books and other stuff. But until next time, keep an eye out in your corridors. See what's crawling your way.
Shop Macy's VIP sale, going on now. Use your coupon or Macy's card and take an extra 30% off the latest fall trends from designers that rarely go on sale. And save 15% off skincare, makeup, fragrances, and more. Plus, shop fall specials for even more great deals on top brands at Macy's. Savings off regular and already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.